Welcome to Beat the Block, a podcast powered by BeatStars, the world's number one marketplace to buy and sell beats.
This is a show where we go deeper than the surface and talk about the best producers and artists in the game, not just about their successes, but also the blocks, dark times, mental health, and unpaid work that comes along with it.
More importantly, we find out they bounce back and turn their downsides into upsides to make a career out of doing what they love so you can too.
Get ready to experience this episode of Beat the Block. What's up, world? This is your friendly neighborhood podcast host, Ill Brown.
What's really good, world? This is your main man, Trox.
Yo, and this is your girl, Candy.
And once again, for the umpteenth time, guess I just made that word up, even though it already exists, you are live with the Beat the Block podcast. We are extremely excited about today's guest. If you out here making those slappers, I mean, good grief, you need to be in tune with this guy. And since this is the theme of the day, I'm going to throw that alley-oop Vince Carter style off the backboard to my co-host for the intro.
We got my man Decap over here. Shout out to my man Decap, man. What's good with you?
Yo, thank you guys for having me, man. It's a pleasure. Everything's good, man. All things considered with the pandemic, just staying creative, trying to have fun with this, man.
All we can do is stay inside, so we might as well stay productive, right?
Absolutely.
I feel like the pandemic is the perfect time for us as creatives.
It's so true.
Yeah.
Man, I could use another 6 months of this thing.
Exactly.
Actually, man, I'm trying to
Let's
stay
limit
in.
The distractions.
I'm trying to get paid and lay low.
Exactly.
And watch my chia pet grow real time.
That's dope.
Sounds exciting.
Right. Really exciting. He's talking about his hair, y'all. Well, Decap, we'll jump right into it. I'm glad to have you on again. But let's talk about the first hip hop album that you bought. Like, when were you introduced to hip hop?
Well, I was first introduced to hip hop because my mom was an aerobics teacher, and she had all these tapes with like all these like hip hop mixes of different stuff. So that was my first introduction to hip hop. The first album I bought was Snoop Dogg Doggy Style, and it was a tape. And that was like the beginning for me. But, you know, before that it was MTV and, you know, recording music videos on VHS and everything. So, yeah, that was my beginning getting into it.
Those were the days.
Yeah.
Definitely. Back in 92.
I still have like 20 tapes of like old videos I recorded from MTV.
My brothers, they used to record the videos on VHS and then also record the radio when radio was like the thing.
Yep.
It's crazy how times have changed. What about that album made you fall in love with hip hop or the sound or, you know, what stood out on that album?
You know, I think it was just all the music sounded like a movie. The production was so crisp. It was just like the energy of it. It had so much raw energy to it. And I think, you know, being a kid, having to go to school and do all the things you have to do in the world without really your choice, I think the music, just the energy of it helped me cope with life, basically. It had this rawness to it. And it just really was inspiring. It hit me in a place where it was just like, that is exactly what I need right now. So it was just, it was just awesome. It's hard to explain because just the energy about it.
That's dope. So one fun fact about that album is the guy that played the bass, shout out to T Green on that album. He actually was the first person that took me in the studio.
Amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So he was a part of that G-Funk vibe. So let's fast forward to junior high. You joined a group called Young Tribe, and then you got a 4-track recorder. An HR16 beat machine. Tell me how you developed as a producer in those early years.
So Young Tribe, there was like 9 of us and we all rapped. So I had a 4-track tape deck and we used to rap on instrumentals. I just remember like putting on Nas's Like and Gangstar instrumentals and we'd just rap. We'd do every track would be like a posse cut. Then one day I was like, you know what? We should do something original. And so I bought this drum machine. It was an HR16. and you couldn't sample into it. It was just all like stock, like kick, snare, hi-hat, tom drums. And, you know, I would just program a beat and we'd rap on the beat. And then I got an SP-202 Boss sampler. I got it for my birthday, and I would just record samples onto it and like chop a sample by hand. No quantization, no like MIDI grid or anything. I'd chop it by hand. So I'd have the HR-16 going into the tape deck and then the sampler going into the tape deck, and it would all be in real time. So I'd have the loop programmed and then I'd sample onto the loop on the tape deck. And then we'd mix that down. And the way you mixed it down was you'd have to take the four tracks on the four track tape deck, send it to another tape deck and record that onto the tape. So that makes it another two tracks. Then you bring that back into the four track and then we could rap on it. So there's no computers or anything like that. It was all like cassettes.
So crazy. That's how I started recording the little beats that I made, is through cassettes. Re-record, redub, overdub, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Dub it back. That is crazy. So do you think that those times like really helped you define your sound, especially with like the samples?
Absolutely. Because in the beginning, I was a fan of like J Dilla, Primo, Pete Rock, and they were all sample based. So in those days, that's all I knew. Like, I didn't know how to play keys or even play a bass line. Like, it was all just about finding sounds on my parents' records and, you know, trying to make something new. And so those were the guys I looked up to. And I think that digging in vinyl, like holding the vinyl in my hand, touching the buttons on the sampler, I think that was definitely a formative thing for me. So when I got into computers a couple of years later, I had already an idea of what I wanted to do.
That's super dope. So you moved to New York to pursue music in high school, right?
After high school and after college, I moved to New York.
How were you able to sustain yourself back then? Because I know a lot of producers, even now today with the internet as being, you know, ways for us to work, it's still like, should I move to a bigger city to pursue music, you know? So, and how do I sustain myself when making that move? So how were you able to do that at that time?
So I really wasn't. I tried my best, but it was just really hard. I was in my early 20s, you know, trying to make it in the world. You know, I left college early to pursue music. I wanted to, you know, get placements and really just go for it. In New York, it was just kind of a rude awakening. Like, it was like, I didn't know what to expect. It was more like me jumping into the unknown. I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know what I was going to encounter. I just knew I wanted to get placements. I knew I wanted to make a name for myself. I wanted to be in the mix. Everyone always said, you got to move to LA or New York. So that was me doing that path. So I didn't really have the tools to really sustain myself. I had a credit card. I racked up like $15,000 in debt. You know, I was selling beats here and there, but it couldn't, like, the way I was doing it, I wasn't able to really sustain myself. Like, I got some placements, but I didn't really understand the business. I would go on Craigslist, buy like a laptop and make like $100 off of it on eBay, you know, that kind of thing. So it was really me trying to hustle and trying to figure it out. I've always been an entrepreneurial thinker. You know, me being a young 20-something, diving in and just trying to make something of myself. So as far as sustaining myself, it kind of just failed miserably. But at the same time, I was getting my life lessons for later.
Right. So it helped build that character.
Yeah, totally.
And,
totally.
You know, being in the music industry is a hustle. So I can see how that helped form. So how long were you in New York?
1 year.
So 1 year, did you move back home, or was that the time that you transitioned to move to San Fran?
So after New York, after that year, me and my manager, we had a place in New York. And then we were looking at a place in Atlanta. So I was going to move to Atlanta. Then at the last moment, one of the houses we were looking at, that situation fell through. And I was just like, you know, and at that time I was starting to get into spirituality and meditation and all that. So, you know, the place we were gonna get in Atlanta, it fell through, and I decided, you know what? That's perfect, because I'm not gonna move to Atlanta. I'm not gonna do music right now. And I fully pivoted into spirituality and, you know, just learning about myself and all that. So from New York, instead of moving to Atlanta, I actually moved back home with my parents for a bit. Yeah, and that was the beginning of just, you know, working on myself, you know, finding my voice, finding my alignment with the bigger picture. Like, because I had already been in music for a while at that point, because I started music in junior high. So I already had a, you know, a snapshot of experience with it. So I think that time of moving into spirituality was like a recalibration and trying to figure out who I am, first of all. Second of all, like what I really want to do.
Gotcha. During that whole time, did you work a part-time job or a full-time job, or were you just like you and your manager teamed up to go hard?
Yeah, when I was in New York, I had no job. It was just me and my manager going hard. Well, I wouldn't say he actually went hard, but it was me. I think I'm supposed to have a manager, so here's my manager. And, you know, I thought maybe that's what we were supposed to do. So it was really me going hard, trying to figure it out and having some success, some placements and all that, but, you know, ultimately not being able to sustain myself. So after that, when I moved back home, I got an office job completely unrelated to music, just multimedia stuff for a short period of time. And I hated it. It just was not for me. But I was able to, you know, just work and not feel so confined during that time. I look at it as like, it was me like crouching like a tiger before the big leap. So
I'll switch gears a little bit, man. While you were studying meditation and spirituality, what was the spark that, you know, that made you make the decision to kind of step away a little bit?
You know what it was? I wouldn't be able to tell you at that time why, but I know now looking back, I had already, okay, one thing, I got into this movie called The Secret. What it was about was your thoughts. The thoughts you think have some kind of effect on your reality. So if you think about something, you're likely to start to see the change in your outer reality, what you think inside your head. So after that, I remember the day I watched it, I watched it with a buddy of mine, and I started being real conscious about my thoughts and thinking the thoughts I wanted to think. And I saw amazing shit happen. That one day, I was just like, I was thinking about like how I wanted to present myself. I was thinking about the type of music I wanted to make. I was thinking about the type of interactions I wanted to have. And all those things, through my thoughts, started manifesting. So day one, I was like in another world. It put me in a new frequency. And in that new frequency, I started seeing different things. So that was a splash of water in my face, like, oh my God, there's a different world that I didn't know about. So when I started exploring that, you know, I had a great experience at first. And then after that, it was followed by some like depression, like a real down moment where those thoughts, like I was thinking thoughts and it wasn't working. Like the movie, The Secret, I was trying to do it, but it wasn't, the thoughts I was thinking weren't happening. So I had this polarized experience. On one hand, I was having great experiences where it was like, oh, this is amazing. And on the other hand, it was like, this isn't working and I'm in this dark space. So what that led me to was a further investigation of what is all this and what am I exploring? What am I learning about? And, you know, how can I get it right? You know, so I started listening to a lot of different spiritual mentors and audios, and then I started meeting them in real life and studying with them. And so that's how that phase of my life started.
Absolutely. I'm glad you touched on that too, man, because manifestation is such a powerful tool, and we don't realize that the universe is always listening, and the universe is literally waiting for you to cast those spells, and words are spells. And you know, it's like a your wish is my command type of a situation. So even if you're speaking, you know, of ill situations and stuff like that, the universe is always listening. So positive thoughts are so important anytime you're dealing with manifestation, you know what I mean? So just wanted to touch on that.
Absolutely.
Definitely. So we've always had tons of guests that come on the show, and they always say that, you know, the moment they failed was when they actually started seeing success. Do you think that's the same for you?
So let me make sure I understand. So the moment they failed was when they started seeing success?
Yeah, or the moment they like have thoughts of like giving up.
I think there's some truth to that. And I can even talk about like when I remember there was this there's been many times when I'll be sitting at my computer, like, ready to make a beat. Or like, sitting at my computer making beats, right? And then there comes a moment where I might feel a little anxious or might feel a little hungry or just want to kind of leave and go home and relax. And usually if I won't say usually, but there's been moments where even though I felt that, I'm like, all right, let's just load up Ableton and make a beat. Why not? Let's see what happens. And there's been times when I felt those negative feelings and I go to make the beat that I actually make something crazy. So you can't always go by your feelings to know, to be a gauge of where you're at, if you're, you know. So I think that there is a point of like rock bottom where, like, you know, that one moment where you're so tired of promoting yourself, that one moment where you're so tired of spending endless hours behind your screen, or that moment where you're tired of meeting people and nothing's happening, a lot of times there is a big shift after that. So I can agree with that too.
I've felt that same experience actually multiple times, really. What did you learn while you were studying meditation and spirituality?
So when I gave up music, I wouldn't say I gave up music, but I took a break and I slowed down with my music and definitely like took a break from the business and everything in about 2008. And that's when I started diving into different books. I read all kinds of different stuff. You know, I really got into meditation. I did like this this thing called HemiSync with brainwave synchronization. And I was trying to see like different states of being. And so I think one thing I learned from that in the beginning was the more clear I am in my mind and in my energy, the more I have access to the thoughts of what I really want. And the more I have access to the thoughts I really want, the more I can think those thoughts. And the more I think those thoughts and not the thoughts that I don't want, the more I start to see the reality that I do want. So it became a chain of events where the first step was to get my mind clear. Second step was to try to think as much as I can about what I want and try to, you know, let go. Like if there's some thoughts that I don't want, try to let them go. So I think what I realized is when I'm in alignment in that sense, I can start to see the experiences that I want to have. And with that, that's the truth of it, but there's always ups and downs. There's moments when you're not in that space. And even how to deal with those moments, like those moments when you're not feeling good, those moments when you're not inspired, those moments when you're angry, those moments when you feel numb or depressed. And in those moments to know how to prepare for when you're back in the higher frequencies. So I found that life is a journey of frequency where you go up in frequency, you go down in frequency. And what I realized the goal is you want to raise your frequency. And then when you drop back down, you want to raise your baseline. So when you drop down, it's not as low
right
as what it used to be. So I think that meditation and things like that help you to raise your baseline frequency.
Indeed.
Abraham Hicks.
Yes.
Abraham Hicks
yep. is amazing.
Yes.
Indeed. I love it. You said you started reading books about meditation. Do you have any recommendations for us at all?
I don't think I've read books about meditation, but I have read a lot of books about life and mind. And I think like what's happened for me now is it's less about spirituality and it's more about creation. You know, it started for me as a spiritual thing and a spiritual opening. And now it's more about conscious creation. And I think one component of that is energy. And it's so important, I think, and whether you want to call it spirituality or whatever, it's so important that we all get in touch with our energy, line up our energy, and then direct our energy so we can create the things and experiences we want to create. So some good books. One book that I really like is The Path of Least Resistance by Robert Fritz. It's not a spiritual book at all, but it's not spiritual at all, but it's about creating what you want. It's like the art of creating. It's like, us as producers, we can make a beat. You know, you open up FL and you load in your sounds. It's a blank canvas until you start putting sounds in there. Why don't we treat our life that way, as like a blank canvas until we create, you know, the things we want to create? So So treat your life as a work of art. Treat your life as a DAW where you're gonna make a banger, you know?
I've never really thought of it like that. That's a really interesting take. I like that. I'm gonna order that book on Amazon as soon as we're done with this. Dope. Actually.
Yeah, it was written in the 80s. It's a good book though. It's a really good book.
The Path of Least Resistance.
Good books are always timeless though, so.
Totally.
I'm definitely excited to dig into that. So you mentioned energy. What would you define energy? Is it more than just our emotions?
It is, yeah. Energy, so depending on your experience with quantum physics, which I don't have much, but I know the basics. And there's a movie about this called What the Bleep Do We Know? That was like another important movie for
me. Yeah, that's a gem.
So everything is energy. Everything is made up of, you know, protons, neutrons, electrons moving really quickly and rapidly. So at their most basic fundamental level, they're atoms and little, you know, universe particles that come together and formulate objects. Energy is getting in touch with everything around you, the forms, the solid forms, you know, this phone, like getting in touch with this, but also the thought forms. What are you thinking about? What are the people around you thinking about? What are they moving towards? What are they starting to create through their thoughts, their words, their actions? What is the situation? What is the energy of the situation you're in? The more you can tap into the energy of the moment, the energy of everything around you, and the energy that you are and your relationship with the energy around you, the more you cut through all the bullshit of life, because everything is energy. It's not your thoughts. It's not what exists. It's energy first. So I find that getting in touch with the energy is really helpful to creating what you want to create and the success you want to create.
Amen to that. So going off of all that, how did you change mentally from the kid in the early 20s in New York, just trying to hustle just to make it, to the person that you are now living off of your art? How did you transform?
That is a great and loaded question. You know, a mixture of hard work in the beginning, just like following my passion, going for it, trying things, and if I feel moved to do something, do it. You know, trying to like not always listen to what other people want for me and going down my path instead and continuing to do that. You know, whether it be parents or teachers or family members, any of that, like just following what you really want to do and then falling on your face because you're not always right. Like you'll do something through a leap of faith and then fall down and mess it up. You know, learn from that, trying to make yourself a better person, trying a bunch of stuff, like, you know, and then when you find something that works, stick with it, make it better, and try to keep improving on that. I think it's just the life for everybody. I think that's everyone's experience. Like you try something, you step into the unknown, and sometimes you succeed, sometimes you don't, and learning from those falls or the flight, you know, like learning from the whole thing.
So you're falling on your face moment. Do you think that's just you moving to New York with no plan and just trying to make it? Or did you have another one that you felt like you fell on your face as well? Or,
you know, and the thing is, the way I think is I've never thought in terms of failure. Everything has always just been an experience for me. So like when I moved out to New York, I was broke. I wasn't really getting great experiences. I was reaching some good experiences in my energy and my spiritually or whatever. But, you know, music-wise and career-wise, I wasn't really making good money. So, yeah, looking back, that was a falling on my face moment. But if you asked me in that moment, I'd be like, no, I'm just living my life. I'm trying my best. So I think part of it is attitude. Even though I was depressed, I never really had a concept of that. It was never like a victim mentality. It was always just like, you know, just in retrospect, I knew I just wasn't doing too good in those moments. And I learned from them. You know, the more you experience what you don't want, the more you get to say, okay, I don't want that. So then you can get more clear about what you do want. So you don't want to be broke. Well, what do you want? I want a flow of abundance in my life, you know? So it's like a jumping off point.
It's a good way that you just look at it as just an experience, not as a failure. Like, it's just part of life. And it's, you just take it as a life lesson. I like how you look at that.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yo, what up, Il Brown? I'm thinking of signing up for BeatStars. What's your experience like?
Man, bro, BeatStars came through for me at a tough time, man. Of course, the industry is much different now. It gave me a platform where I didn't have to build my own website, and I was able to upload my beats and sell them and engage with the community, man. I had a crazy first month, man. Did like 4K in sales.
Wow.
And I've been a fan and a member of BeatStars ever since. Sign up on BeatStars and start making money with your beats. Go to bit.ly/beattheblock1. Again, that's bit.ly/beattheblock1. Peace.
So for listeners who might be having a hard time with things like meditation, what do you suggest they do? Like how do you think producers can, you know, benefit? And also, we deal with anxiety a lot. So how do you think we can curb that, or what ways can we do that through meditation?
Yeah, so I that's a really good question. And I experience depression, anxiety, fear, all those kind of things frequently, just like every human being. Meditation, a lot of people, when I bring up meditation, will say, oh, I don't meditate, I'm not good at it. And I want to tell everyone why that's absolute bullshit, and this will help everyone. You don't have to be good at meditating. As a matter of fact, just by you taking the time to try to meditate, you're going to improve your energy. How I recommend doing it is literally, like, I have a couch back here, and just before this, I did like a 5-minute meditation. Sit on the couch, close your eyes, and shift your attention from, maybe it's in your head or in your thoughts or whatever, shift it from your thoughts into your body. So move your energy into your feet, into your legs, into your stomach. And what you want to do is just focus on your breath. If a thought comes in, that's fine. Just let it go. Don't entertain it. It might even be like, oh, I just got an idea to promote something on Instagram. Oh, I just got an idea for a new track I want to make. Oh, I just realized I have to write this email. Just let all that go. And if you need to, have a little notepad next to you and just write those ideas down. But literally every time you think a thought, just shift it back into your body. So thoughts are going to come in like frequently, and you just want to shift it back into your body. Another thing to pay attention to while you're in your body is your breathing. So you want to focus on maybe taking a breath at half speed. So breathe in at half the speed, and then breathe out at half the speed and pause a little bit. You're going to keep thinking thoughts like, oh, I'm not good at this, or oh, blah, 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 blah. Just shift it back into the body and just keep doing your breath. So there really is no good or bad. Everyone's already a pro at meditating. Everybody. No matter how many thoughts you think, you can just go back into your body in that moment.
Man, that's super dope. That's super dope.
Some great insight.
And I say that because I think there's a lot of people that, you know, are using apps and things like that. And I'm like, you don't need any of that. Just sit down and close your eyes. You know, if you're on a bus, on a train, it doesn't matter if there's a lot of sound or anything. Like, you can even, I have these AirPods. It has noise canceling. If it's really loud, you can turn them on for a minute and just block out the sound. But, you know, anything to just take a minute just to focus on breath and your feet and your body. And what I like about it is, what's amazing about meditation for me is it's a way that I can quickly get back in my zone. So a lot of people want to know, how do I get in the zone? How do I get in the flow? Take a minute and disconnect. Like, disconnect from your thinking, disconnect from activity, and just get into your body a little bit.
Word, I dig that, man. Your mindset in general about a lot of things have changed, but how did your mindset on the business side of things change?
I think what happened was, in the beginning, I just didn't understand it. And there was things I did understand, because when I was in college, I read a lot of books about psychology, sales and business, marketing. So I tapped into all these things with the resources I had. So I started to learn about it early, and I was able to apply some of that in selling beats and things like that. Nowadays, I mean, YouTube is way, 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 there's way more information than I ever had access to when I was reading these books. But how my mindset has changed is I think I just got more mature and just learned more and had more experience and had some success, you know, some things, some experiences. And I think just over time, I was able to synthesize more ideas that I learned before and more new ideas. And I think the way that I frame it is, I think even my initial idea about, you know, it all starting with your thoughts, just creating the life you want, creating the business experiences you want, like thinking about the type of clients you want, thinking about the type of artists you want to work with, think about, you know, all that, and just trying to be really clear about it. And I think it was just a process, honestly. I think it was just me learning and experiencing life, you know?
Absolutely. So how have you, touching back on the things we talked about manifestation and The Secret and various movies and books, how do you apply that towards the business side of things? Like, is there any certain strategies you may use or any certain, you know, some places that you go to enhance, you know, what you're doing on the business side of things?
Absolutely. You know, because it all starts with thought. So I think one thing to do is pay attention to the people around you doing it. Like, notice who's winning and pay attention to exactly what they're doing to win. And what I realize is, like, you know, you'll see people, like, you could take any artist and who's winning, and you could analyze their career by watching their social media, watching, you know, the music they put out, watching the products they put out. And you can start to understand what they're doing, and then you can start to see, oh, I like that. I like what they did there. Oh, I don't like that. I don't like what they did there. And then look at someone else. I like what they did there. That's really dope how they did that. Oh, but that, I don't really like how they did that. Be like, oh, and me, I like that, and this is how I would do it if I were to do it. Oh, I don't like that. I don't even want to do that. That's pretty cool, but I think I could do that a little differently. So I think part of it is just paying attention to what people are doing, and if it works, take a mental note of it and then do it in your own way. Or just put it in the back of your mind, like, okay, maybe later that will come in at some point. But I think paying attention to what people who inspire you are doing, and then flipping it in your own way and doing it your own way. That's what artists do. Artists take inspiration and combine it, you know, with their action. And that's how they get their own sound. That's how they get their own business. So for me, it's about just finding my flow. Like, you know, there's a lot of people, including me when I started out, who think that the name of the game to get into hip hop is about getting major placements. I put out a record on DistroKid in 2016 with no promo that hit number 6 on Billboard. So that's better than almost anything I've done as far as major placements. I have a platinum plaque. I did a platinum track with this artist Rule, Dazed and Confused, and that was through a label. But it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. It can be any way that you do it. Like, it doesn't have to be platinum. It could hit Billboard. It could just produce you revenue. It could get you known in niches. So it's not always about the traditional route of, like, I need to grind and get placements and get plaques and get Grammys. That's not always where the money is. For me, it was about self-releases, releasing my own stuff and building my own brand and having everything come back to me. When I'm going for placements, that's an extension of my brand. It's not the whole reason why I am where I am. I am where I am because I'm me and I do things my way. And I think for every producer listening, you can be yourself and do things your way and treat the business different from anyone in history. And you can create it the way you want to create it because you're you. I just want to stress that, like, I see sometimes new producers really emulating other people who already did it. But the problem is that person they're emulating is them. It's not you. So what you want to do is continuously get inspired by other people, but continuously do it your way. And I know that's probably easier said than done, but your way, everyone's path is unique. And I think, you know, when I first started out, I used to copy J Dilla beats and DJ Premier beats. Like, that's how I first started learning how to use Cool Edit and make a beat. But as I started maturing in my sound and all that, it really started to, you know, take on me and become my sound. So I think that's just the process of finding your voice in life and business and music.
Word, man. Appreciate the insight on that, man. You focus a lot on publishing, besides actually producing tracks for people. Give us a little insight about publishing for you know, listeners, because they ask us a ton of publishing questions. What advice would you give a lot of the people that's going to be listening to this podcast about publishing?
You know, publishing is a big part of your bread and butter as a producer releasing music. So there's a couple scenarios. One is, say you self-release, like under, you know, my Spotify and Apple Music and everything, DCAP, I have releases that are either just instrumentals, songs I do with artists. You know, I just have tons of releases. And on my Spotify, you know, now I have about, you know, 70 or 80,000 monthly listeners, which all happened just by releasing music. I never did a whole lot of Spotify promo. I just consistently did releases. So from a publishing standpoint, anytime I make, say I make an instrumental and I want to put it out for people just to listen to, once I release that, I automatically own 100% of the publishing. Now, say I work with an artist on a track, and it's a, say it's a rapper who gets on one of my beats, and I mix it and we put it out there. And we, you know, we promote it and everything. You know, one negotiation could be I own half of the publishing and they own half of the publishing. And I own half the writer, they own half the writer. So anytime publishing income comes in, we split that 50-50. When I do, you know, say I make a track for an artist, you know, major artist, you know, we do a negotiation and maybe we'll say I collect 50% of the publishing, you collect 50% of the publishing. So that would be like a 50-50 arrangement. The thing is, once I want everyone producer to know, once you create a piece of music, once you make a beat, automatically you own that copyright. You own it. I don't care if you sent it into you know, the copyright office to get copyrighted. By law, if you made that in form, you own that copyright. As soon as it's recorded, you own it. So that means that you own your publishing for that. So if someone wants to use your track, what they're doing, like, for example, I see sometimes producers will do licensing deals where they give up their publishing in exchange for, you know, it might be money or it might be, you know, sharing publishing. In order to do that, your leverage point as a producer is there has to be an exchange that's reasonable for you to give up your publishing. So it's really about leverage in that sense. And speaking of leverage, leverage is like a big thing I've learned in business also. Getting back to your question about like, what have I learned business-wise? One of the biggest concepts I've learned is leverage and the power of leverage in every situation. Because in every situation, you engaging with a situation by default means that you have leverage to some degree, whether it be zero leverage or some leverage or full leverage is going to depend on the situation. And one thing to practice is being aware of that leverage. So if you have a platinum record with tons of placements and tons of hits and all this, you're going to be in a better situation, for example, to ask for more upfront money for your track, or ask for more publishing, or ask for a higher percentage, or when you do a deal with a company, asking for more money. As you get more placements or more accolades or more brand awareness, your leverage goes up. And so that means you are in a position to have better negotiation. So be aware of where you're actually at leverage-wise. If you have no leverage in the situation, maybe you don't have hits, you don't have placements, you haven't done many things with companies and you haven't experienced that, your goal is to build leverage. So the thing to do is strategically think of situations that you can use to build leverage. It might be working with a new artist to develop your sound with them, or it might be getting that major placement and having your name attached to that. Think about how you can increase your leverage, and that comes through accomplishments.
Word. That's great information, man. I can't wait for this one to go live, honestly, man. Like, people should have a pen and a pad out and to be absorbing these gems, man. So let's switch gears a little bit, man. Drums That Knock, man. I'm a fan of Drums That Knock. I've purchased Drums That Knock. I've used Drums That Knock. You know what I'm saying? What was the void that...
They knock.
They knock. In fact,
right.
You know what I mean?
They knock.
Everybody needs knocking drums, for sure. You know what I'm saying? So what was the...
Facts. 100%.
Indeed, man. So what was the void that they filled for producers And how did you go about the, you know, the sound design specifically for the Drums That Knock series?
Yeah, so I was not the first person to ever do a drum kit. I came up with drum kits, and it's always been something that I've incorporated into my process. At first, it was just sampling off records, and then, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, great drum kits over the years. But one thing I noticed is that none of the drum kit, all the drum kits were like all over the board, like different volumes and different levels, and you know, some of them were professional, some of them weren't. So I remember meeting with a bunch of producers and people saying, yo, you can't make drums knock in Ableton like you can in FL Studio. And I always heard that and I was like, really? I don't think so. And I met with this famous producer and I was like, yeah, you can, man. Check this out. And he was like, no. It's not knocking like that. And I was like, really? And so what happened for me is I kind of got obsessed. I was like, how is it that one DAW sounds different? So I did a lot of comparison. I really studied the sound. In that, started getting into sound design and really like trying to figure out different things. Like if I clip this sound or if I saturate this sound or, you know, and really studying like the in-depth, like the waveforms and like how they interact with the plugins and everything. And all of a sudden, I feel like I kind of figured out some things in the beginning. And so I put out Drums That Knock Volume 1. And the way I treated it was I wanted every sound to be mixed and mastered. So like as soon as you import it, it sounds good. It sounds big. It sounds full. And there was zero drum kits that ever did that. So I was the first person to put out Drums That Knock. You know, I wanted everything to be hard hitting and I wanted it to translate. And the way I thought about it is, okay, I'm gonna put this out. Maybe, you know, a couple hundred people will buy it. I'll get some of my producer homies, help them out, like, you know, give them good sounds to fuck with. It'll be a good thing. And as soon as I put it out, the response was overwhelming. I was like, wow, people actually really fuck with this. And so then I just kept going with Drums That Knock and just doing more and more. And every one, I've learned so much. I never thought like I would get so much into sound design because I'm a producer first. I never thought of myself as a sound designer until Drums That Knock. And then I really started studying it. And now it's at the point where all the kits are doing really well. I'll go on Spotify, listen to the new releases and hear 6 tracks with loops from my kit on it. Grammy winning songs with Drums That Knock. It's really wild. It's shocking, actually. I remember the first time I heard a song on the radio with my woo shout, it was just like, that's me. And so I never thought, you know, something like that would happen, but you know, I'm happy that I was able to do that.
That's so dope, man. Shout out to you for, you know, putting that together, man. Definitely some of the highest quality sounds out there, man. So, you know, producers go and get that.
I appreciate that, dude. And you know, the other thing, and I think another reason why Drums That Knock took off, unlike a lot of kits, I'm making all the sounds from scratch. So
no doubt,
you know, a lot of kits are like recycling sounds and bringing them together and everything. I wanted to make sure that every sound in these kits are like new for producers. So every time I drop something, it's like you're getting all new sounds. And there's a good and bad on that. The bad is it takes me forever to do it because it's so in depth. The good is it's totally unique from anything out there.
Hey, we always say, quality over quantity. I'll take it.
Thank you.
You know what I'm saying?
Thank you.
The gumbo take a little longer than just a can of chicken noodle soup from Campbell's. You know what I'm saying?
So 100%.
Yep. Got to wait for the gumbo to simmer up and
facts.
All those ingredients got to come together the right way, man. So let's switch gears a little bit, man. Being in the industry, this is kind of like a segment along with Rap Life that we like to do anytime we get the Rap Life alerts. We love to talk about funny stories and humorous experiences that we go through being in this industry. Man, feel free to tell us about some funny over the years. Could be a studio session, a phone call, any experience that's just hilarious you like to, you know, share with the fans.
Okay, I got one. So back in 2007, I was in New York, and that's around the time I was getting into meditation and everything.
Right.
I remember I had like kind of a peak experience when I was meditating. Like I had like a really beautiful, like healing experience where I felt like I had a lot of clarity and a lot of insight, and it was just really amazing. The next day I woke up, I was working on a banger, and Redman walked into my apartment randomly in New York City. Like, I didn't invite him over or anything. He was in the neighborhood and he needed to use the bathroom. And so my manager saw him and said, come on up. So Redman popped up out of nowhere. And so it was like something out of a dream. I felt like I was living in a dream world, but that was pretty hilarious, man.
That's crazy.
Just funny.
I know, like, Redman is a funny dude anyway. So I know, like,
yeah,
he really is.
I know he's a legend, man. Dude. Amazing.
And to come off a meditation and then Redman walks into your apartment.
It was surreal and wild and funny. And I don't know if he'd remember that, but I'll always remember that.
That's definitely something you don't forget.
Right.
What do you think about the beat, though? You know what I'm saying? I know that's why.
He was loving it. He came in my room. He's like, oh, it's dope.
I heard a lot of good things about him as a person, man. Like, he's just one of those guys where he's just super down to earth.
He seems like a good dude, too.
No doubt. So you've accomplished a lot in your career. Would you say so?
Absolutely, man. I mean, if I look back, you know, what I wanted to become as a kid and what I am now, it's not the same, but in ways it surpassed it, in ways it's just different. But looking at it, like, the path I'm taking is like the right one for me. So I have to say, like, I'm grateful. I'm super grateful for where I am and what I've accomplished. But being who I am, like, I feel like I have so much more to do, and I'm not complacent with that.
Amen to that, man. Amen. So with those things, like, what can we look forward to from you? Like, what do you got in store?
More good sounds, more good music. I definitely want to be more outspoken about my process and help people. I love teaching. I love just connecting with fans. You know, really, I feel like I just want to share my process with the world, and just, you know, I want to collab with great artists, put out great sounds, just make great music for the charts, for the underground, for the tapes. I just want to, like, just make dope shit and just help people. So just a lot more of that.
I feel like that's the goal for life for producers like us, man.
100%. And it's amazing, man. I'm glad you guys have this platform. This is really dope. I think there's going to be a lot of gems on this platform. It's a lot of good stuff and great questions, too.
This platform is 100% the product of manifestation.
It is.
Like, myself, Trox, Candy, it just snowballed into something that we think is going to just continue to help artists and producers. It's just wild. We've actually, you know, the thought of this podcast started, 3 years ago, Trox? We said, hey, man,
yep,
we want to really be able to help producers and talk about mental health and talk about the ups and downs. And it's funny that, you know, us being producers, it wasn't meant for the platform we originally wanted it to be on. We had to be a little more patient. And now it's in the perfect spot to help and heal a lot of our producer comrades and everything. So
absolutely.
Most definitely.
Yeah, we're glad to have you on. You shared a great perspective and a lot of hidden gems, I would say, because, you know, how when we talk about spirituality or meditation, it is a hidden gem that it's starting to come into the forefront, but a lot of people don't know that they're actually practicing it and they're not getting the results they want in their life. So I think that you really explain things quite well, especially in relationship to pursuing a career in music, because, you know, we go through ups and downs all the time, and people are really broken just being in this field. So thanks for sharing all of that. Can you let all the people know where they can find you online?
Thank you for that. So you can find me everywhere at Decap Music. So Instagram.com, Decap Music, Twitter, Facebook. Also on my Instagram profile, you can text me directly. I have my number on there. I'm communicating with people, just having conversations outside of social media, just to build a community outside of all the noise and everything going on. So you can text me. I have a YouTube channel where I have tutorials and, you know, just conversations. You know, I have lots of content on YouTube, on other channels. You know, and also drumsatknock.com. That's where I have the drum sounds, and I have a master class on there. And yeah, just start by following me on Instagram and other social media.
Awesome.
No doubt.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah.
A whole lot of gems, man. This is like, you know, the diamond mines. We're going to call that
for
this episode.
Yeah, the diamond mines. That's awesome.
So,
I like it.
That's what's up. I like that.
Diamond mines. You know, I like it.
get all these gems while you can. You know what I'm saying? So we appreciate you for coming on, D-Cap. And that's it for today, man. So without further ado, we're going to get up out of here. I am your friendly neighborhood podcast host, Ill Brown.
And this is Trox.
Yo, and this is your girl, Candy.
And like we always say, we'll catch you on the next episode.
Peace. Thank you, guys.
Woo! Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Beat the Block. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. It helps the show a lot. See you on the next episode. Peace.